That wraps up the main talks for this afternoon, and I want to thank everyone for being so good about staying on time. This has been fantastic. Our last activity this afternoon is the running sequence of short presentations on the posters.
We need both session one and session two, so please announce that both of the speakers should come.
Okay, and if we can queue up over here, both session one and session two posters that had arranged to talk are on tap. So if you can arrange yourselves over there, things will go a lot faster in the transition. Okay, take it away and introduce yourself and then your 1 minute.
Is this working? Okay, good. So I'm Chelsea Brown. I'm from the University of Manitoba. And I did an imaging and spectroscopy study of RCW-103 using Chandra and XMN-Newton data. So the interesting thing about RCW-103 is that it has the CTO that goes through periodic magnetar-like outbursts. So the imaging part of the study will start here. I did a Chandra RGB image followed by an XMM-Newton line image. For the spectroscopy, we looked at two component thermal fits. This is just a representative data for the regions that span the entire SNR. For our main results, we looked at explosion energy, which is very small, at 3.7 times 10 to the 49, with an upper limit at 2 times 10 to the 50. So with all of our assumptions, these are very low explosion energy estimates. And then for the progenitor mass, we got 12 to 13 solar masses where we looked at degeneracies in the explosion energies. Yeah, thank you.
Perfect, perfect.
Okay, good evening, everybody. So the supernova remnant G150 has an angular radius size of 3 degrees that suggests either an old or nearby SNR. So here you have its gamma ray emission from 1 GeV to 1 TeV, where the best fit disk here is represented in blue. So in the south of the remnant, there is a point source which has a pulsar-like spectrum in the Fermilab catalog. So we localize these sources and we verify that it's not extended. So concerning the spectral analysis of the supernova remnant, as you can see here, it has a hard spectral shape, which actually favors the Young supernova remnant scenario. And this is also in agreement with the estimated distance of 0.6 kiloparsec, making this supernova remnant one of the closest GV gamma ray emitting SNR. So here you can see we have acceleration of particles at least up to TV energy, and the origin of the emission seems to be leptonic, but surprisingly, the radio shell is quite faint, and no non-thermal emission, X-ray emission, sorry, has been reported so far. So we are currently doing the analysis, starting at lower energy, to better constrain the spectrum of these two sources and investigate their possible association. Thank you very much.
Hello, I'm here to present my poster and my two collaborators' poster as well. So our idea was let's make maps of a physical parameter of supernova remnants just to prove that we can make maps of them using imaging instead of spectroscopy so that we can have a better resolution than with IFUs. So we chose two remnants from Green's catalog of supernova remnants that were enough to fit in our telescope of choice. And one of them is G65, which is this one. And after we optimally subtracted the continuum, like you see here, in three different bands, this is H-alpha, sulfur-2, and oxygen-3, and the same for the G67 supernova remnant. We then consulted the grids from Mappings 3 and from Allen's ITERA, and we created the maps of the velocity of the two supernova remnants. Now, there is a degeneracy between two velocity maps because the 1D diagnostic we use is degenerate, but to solve the degeneracy, one just needs more lines, imaging in more lines, and also for more parameters. So,
thank you.
Space is over.
Yes. Hi, Calispera. In this poster, we report the identification and confirmation of supernova remnants in the nearby galaxy NGC 3344. 4 million spectra were obtained using the FTS CTEL in the Canada-France-Hawaii telescope. And to have pure emission from the SNR, we subtracted two backgrounds, a local one and a global one. Identification of supernova SNR candidate was done using in automatic way using these four criteria, and to confirm the mechanism of ionization, we use two diagnostic tools, the Sabadan plot and the BPT diagrams. We found 42 confirmed SNR, 45 probable SNR, and 42 less likely SNR. We compared our observation with shock models, and we found the metallicity range from between LMC and 2 times solar, and the shock velocity below 250 kilometers per second. This contribution is a part of a new and a wonderful project called OCESAR that I will present tomorrow at the same time. Thank you. Ifharisto.
Yeah, I'm Paul Shenou from ASIA. In this poster, we want to show that even in the broadband AHT image in the archive, we can still reveal some supernova remnants. So in M33, there are 6 supernova remnants out of 80 revealed in the HSD broadband images, and they are X-ray bright supernova remnants in the dense environments. So we can see that this is ground-based image, and in this HSD broadband image, they better resolve the structure, and we can see some filamentary structures here. And we also propose that a method that we can compare the different broadbands in HST, and we can use this to search for the Balmer-dominated supernova remnants, because in different broadbands, they include different lines. Some of them only have Balmer lines, and some of them only have forbidden lines. So we can compare them to search for Balmer-dominated supernova remnants. And this is my poster. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. I'm Zoe Spetsieris from the National Observatory of Athens. I'm a final year PhD student working under the supervision of Dr. Bonanos. I will be speaking to you about transient supernovae and high amplitude variables in the HCV. The Hubble catalog of variables, the HCV, is a huge catalog which includes all variable sources observed from the Hubble Space Telescope. What we did in our project was to query that catalog and identify all variable stars with amplitude of variability larger than 1 magnitude, and we identified more than around 830 new multi-filter variable stars. This means that they have observations in more than one filters. We found 7 non-reported transients, among them 3 candidate supernovae, which we show you here, 4 non-reported variable AGNs, and 3 non-reported QSOs. We aim to construct a huge catalog containing all these transients and supernovae, which could help in observations and in finding supernova remnants and or the progenitors of these stars. Thank you very much.
Okay, my name is Maria Angeli Diaz. I think after Jeremiah's talk, he already gave my 1 minute slide. So theory predicts that stars that are above asolar masses explode, but in detail this is not clear. Some of them do explode, but some of them don't. So we're trying to see which ones are actually exploding. So our goal is to statistically infer the progenitor mass distribution using supernova remnants to identify the population around supernova remnants to see what the progenitor mass is associated with that population. So more generally, what we want, we have like a power law distribution, and we want to know what is the minimum progenitor mass for these stellar explosions. Is there a maximum progenitor mass? And what is the slope of the progenitor mass distribution? And we have already did this for M31 and M33 supernova remnants, in which we found the minimum mass is 7.3 plus minus 0.1 solar masses, and we found an upper mass limit above 59 solar masses, and a slope that is minus 2.96, which is a little bit steeper than saltpeter. If you want to know more, just go and talk to me in my poster. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Taylor Jakovich, and as the title slide or the slide suggests, I'm going to talk to you about three grids of about 100 progenitor models covering about 12.5 to 22.5 solar masses. We run them to iron core collapse in Mesa, then pipe the output into SNEC along with the mass loss history, and we pipe that into VH1 to generate the circumstellar environment. We then take the outputs of both of those, pipe them back into cosmic ray hydro, CR hydro, without the cosmic rays, and we output spectra. And we notice a couple interesting things. First, the mass loss of these objects really kicks off at the red supergiant phase, so very late time mass loss, last 100,000 years or so. And also these spectra look particularly different depending on the zeroid main sequence mass of the progenitors. So you can see the 13 solar mass progenitor has what looks like a Bremsstrahlung continuum along with the lines, whereas there is radiative recombination continuum in the 22 solar mass progenitor. So if you have any other questions, come see me. I'd be happy to talk about this, some of the caveats, which I kind of left hanging. So, yeah.
Thank you. Tell us your name again, since your name is not on the slide.
Taylor Jakovich.
Okay, thank you.
Hello, I'm Benxiong Li from Tsinghua University in China. My work is on supernova 18OH, which Tom has mentioned this morning. My focus is on the ejecta properties. We found that there is a time gap between the exhaustion time derived from the Kepler telescope light curve and the emergence of the radiative energy derived from the bolometric light curve and the radiation diffusion model. The gap is around 4 days. We also found there is ambered carbon left in the ejecta. It goes very deep into the ejecta, and it has the latest detection of carbon in any supernova 1A as late as 3 weeks after the maximum. For more discussion about the supernova and its progenitor system, please see my poster. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm introducing my second poster. Is that there a critical metallicity of mass loss in massive star evolutions? In this project, we use the Sterling recipes and the MESA code, and want to see in the stellar evolutions how much mass is lost and how much kinetic energy is released. So this is the main interesting result, and this is metallicity and mass. We have 2,000 models with different metallicity and mass. Seems to be an obvious jump at about Z equals to 10 to the minus 3. Below this metallicity, there's nearly no mass loss. And above this metallicity, the mass loss is much higher. And we found that the reason is because in low metallicity stars, they can never become the red supergiant, so the mass loss is lower. And the high metallicity stars, they can become the red supergiant. So for more detail, you can go to see my poster. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Ryoma Uchi from Japan, and this is the title of my poster. So as many people have talked in today's session, so the confined CSM may be present even for typical type 2 supernovae. And so one of the possible mechanisms for the confined CSM is the energy deposition in the envelope in just years before the supernova explosion. So such energy deposition might be caused by the wave of the advanced burning stages. So in this context, we have investigated the effect of such pre-supernova energy injection into the envelope. And we have calculated how such energy injection affects the progenitors and the ensuing supernovae. So we have injected the energy injection with the parameterized forms. And we have found that the envelope inflation is caused by such energy injection, and the supernova will look like the one from very extended red supergiants. And so if the energy injection rate is highly superhidden, the supernova will be very bright, and it does not match with the observed type 2 supernovae. So by comparing with such observations, we have derived the constraint on such pre-supernova energy injection rate. So for more details, please come to my poster. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Lei from Nanjing University. My poster here is about the X-ray emission from Kepler supernova remnant. And in this work, we used the deep Chandra data to investigate the detailed spatial distribution of multiple physical parameters, just like the temperature, the ionization parameters, and the metal abundance. And we further distinguished the CSM from ejector, mainly based on their different metal abundance ratios. And you can see the CSM dominate the bar-like structure like this, and the two ejector dominate the ears like this. And we give further implications of the progenitor and the explosion mechanism, just like I write there. And you can go to my poster for the details. Thank you.
Oh, hello. My name is Almog Ilyanovich. I'm coming here from the Canadian Institute of Theoretical Astrophysics. And I want to tell you about a way to get not the properties of the progenitor of the supernova, but its companion. So how does this work? You have a companion and a primary in a binary, and they go around each other. And as they do, the wind that's emitted from the primary is modulated, and you get these beautiful spiral waves. And as the supernova shockwave rams into them, it creates wiggles in the radio light curve, as you can see here. And from the amplitude and the period, you can get the semi-major axis and the mass of the companion. And if you want to hear more, you're welcome to come to my poster. Thank you.
Okay, well, if that is the last poster, it looks like it was. That was spectacular. Thank you, everyone, for keeping to the time. And thank you to our organizers for putting together the PDF file that made that go so smoothly. And with that, let's also thank all of the afternoon speakers, and we'll see you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.